letting me be here. It's very nice being back in PI. So today I'll be telling you a story about a class of models that displays very peculiar like dynamical behavior. So this model exhibits like partly ergodic behavior and also partly non-ergodic behavior, which is very interesting. And these are interacting many-body systems. So these systems were experimentally realized. So these are experimentally motivated. And so this work is done in collaboration with Hannes, Sunwan, and Misha at Harvard. So this is a brief outline that I'll go through. I'll first give you an introduction about what quantum dynamics is and why we're interested in studying this and what the different universality classes are. And then I'll give you an introduction to what the current state-of-the-art experiments are with regard to probing such physics, such dynamics, especially in terms of quantum simulators. I guess I should have a pointer, but I'm stuck with the stick. So I should be wary not to hit the screen so hard. Yeah, and in these experiments, they found some puzzling oscillations and some puzzling very non-ergodic behavior in what we believe to be an ergodic system. And so I will try to describe them. And then I'll try to describe some analysis that we have done to understand how can we describe such oscillations and such non-ergodic behavior, and perhaps make a connection to the phenomenon of quantum scarring, which are deviations from ergodicity in single particle chaotic systems. And if you've not heard of quantum scarring before, don't worry, I'll get to that. So without further ado, introduction to quantum dynamics. So as condensed matter physicists, we are interested in understanding the different phases of matter. That's usually done at the ground state or at equilibrium. But we could also ask about the long-time behavior of interacting quantum systems. Is there something universal about this? So one easy scenario to consider is something called a quantum quench. Imagine that you're bringing the system very out of equilibrium, very highly energetic initial state, which is simple, product state, for example. And then you let the system evolve under its own unitary dynamics. And here we're very careful to be working in the closed interacting systems. And we want to ask a question, what is the fate? What is the long-term fate of such systems? And so for many of us, the long-term fate of a quantum many-body system typically is thermalizing. It obeys some sort of ergodic paradigm. And this actually underlies much of our understanding of equilibrium statistical mechanics, that if you start off with some initial state and it goes off in time, the rest of the system can interact with a subregion and eventually thermalize the subregion, so that in this subregion, it can be given, it can be described by statistical mechanics. And so systems that obey this paradigm have dynamics which is ergodic, and they would eigenstates would obey the ETH, and they would have volume law, for example. But recently, we have uncovered a new class of many-body systems which do not have ergodic dynamics, which are systems that have, say, very strong quenched disorder. And so here is a caricature of, say, a particle moving in some disordered landscape, and there could be interactions and many-body effects. But the upshot is that if the disorder is very strong, then it can get localized and stuck in some position. And so these many-body systems under unitary dynamics would not thermalize and would not explore the phase space that a particle could potentially explore in an entire Hilbert space. And so this leads to this kind of like phase diagram of what we can expect and universality classes in quantum dynamics. On one hand, we have the thermalizing one, where stat mag applies. And on the other hand, we have non-ergodic phases given by MBL, where you can have different long-time behaviors. You can have MBL spin glasses, paramagnets, topological order. You can include periodic driving. You can get new phases of non-equilibrium matter, which are time crystals, for example. And I have left ... for extra phases that have yet to be discovered. Of course, there are some exceptions to this, for example, like free fermions. So there are some exceptions, for example, like free fermions or integral systems, and those don't fall into this paradigm, but those are just singular special points. So one big question for us in this field is, are there other kinds of dynamics? What other kinds of behavior can a many-body system undergo under its unitary evolution? But of course, not just its infinite time, long time behavior is interesting. What's also interesting is how it gets there. But this subject is conversely not as well understood. For example, a thermal system, for example, if you measure a local observable, eventually the local observable would thermalize to a value given by ETH. But the time scales on which it occurs is not, say, very well understood. It could be given by the scattering, for example, time of quasi particles in the system, temperature of the bath, for example. And in fact, you could have interesting transient behaviors such as pre-thermalization, where systems could, you know, exhibit some pre-thermal plateau, where it thermalizes to something not given by the eventual thermal ensemble, but a ensemble governed by some other Hamiltonian for some time. So these questions are very interesting and deserve to be understood more. So this is where quantum simulators come in. So quantum simulators are a bunch of quantum systems that we can prepare in a lab, that we can create in a lab, and we have like very good control over them. So today I'll be telling you a bit about the Rydberg atom array quantum simulator that was performed, that is present in Misha Lukin's lab in Harvard, and the interesting experiments that were done there. So just as a brief introduction to what quantum simulators are, as I said, they are just quantum systems in which we have, you know, good control over each constituent. It could be, for example, trapped ions, or cold atoms, or superconducting qubits. And the crucial fact is that they are very well isolated, so we can probe unitary quantum dynamics here, and they have strong interactions. And furthermore, we have very good control over what we can measure from this system. Single site resolution, for example, we can observe whether there's a spin or ion on each site. And I refer you to two papers that came out last year, like two complementary papers. You know, many body dynamics on the 51 atom quantum simulator. This was done on Rydberg atoms. And this 53 qubit quantum simulator was done on trapped ions in the University of Maryland in Monroe's group. And as you can see, they differ by just 2 qubits. Reason for why this was 51 was because it was just larger than 49, which happened to be the largest quantum simulator that Google had at the point in time. So you can see the trend. They will keep adding 1 qubit or 2 qubits and get more papers out. But the point is, it's a very big system. This is larger than what we can simulate numerically, right? 51 qubits. So this makes it very well suited for probing many body physics. And in particular, I'll talk about this paper here. So what they have is an array of Rydberg atoms comprised of rubidium atoms, 87 rubidium. It's not so important how they do it, but what you need to know is that they can trap the atoms in any geometry they want. Here, this is in 1D. And what they can do is that they have full control over where the atoms are. They can load the atoms in an array. Then they can prepare any state they want by kicking out any atom they want or moving them together. And so they can prepare any initial configuration and let them evolve in time. And then they can detect what happens afterwards. Yeah, so, sorry. Yeah, so the crucial point is that each atom is a two-level system. And so this makes it ideal for modeling a spin chain. Now, what's interesting here is that the atoms have a very particular or very interesting interaction between themselves. So if you take two such atoms, they interact via some very strong van der Waals interaction. And this is a 1/R6 long range interaction. So if, for example, this state is in the excited state, then and this state is in the ground state of the atom, then there's no interaction piece here. So the energy felt is zero. But conversely, if two atoms were both in the excited state, then there exists an energy penalty that prevents the two states from being both excited at the same time. And of course, this interaction depends on the distance. So what happens is that if you can move the atoms together and put them at some, you know, distance such that this guy prevents the neighbor from being excited, then you have a one-site blockade radius, for example. You can, of course, squish them further together, I mean closer together to make a two-site blockade. But effectively, in what we have, we can think of it as a one-site blockade. And this is called a Rydberg blockade mechanism. Now, see, if we have one atom, then we have, of course, two states in the Hilbert space. what happens if you have L such atoms on a 1D chain? So if you have two atoms, you can of course allow the next guy to be in the ground state. But if this is excited, it means that the left guy must also be in the ground state and so on. And you can build up the Hilbert space this way. And you realize quickly that it grows like a Fibonacci sequence. And this, so essentially what I'm saying is that in their model, the atoms, they are exploring a Hilbert space, which is effectively constrained. And this Hilbert space has no local tensor product structure because you're removing the configurations that have both 1-1. And so you should not think of them as just a spin half chain, even though they were built out of a spin half chain. And so you can show that the number of states for an L side chain grows as a Fibonacci sequence. And for the astute, you would notice that this precisely maps to the Hilbert space of L Fibonacci anions. So, okay, given that now I've defined the Hilbert space, what did they realize in experiments? So in experiments, they can simply drive the atoms via some field, and that causes transitions from the 0-1 state. And essentially, this is just a driving that moves the center guy from down to up and up to down. But notice that because of the constraints in the Hilbert space, this can only happen if its neighbors are both in the down state. So we have an effectively constrained kind of dynamics where the Ruby oscillation, it depends on the neighbors. This looks like a non-interacting Hamiltonian, but actually, if you write it in the basis of the full spin halves, you realize that there are strong interactions that penalize configurations or that project out configurations which are not allowed in a Hilbert space. So this is a many-body Hamiltonian. It's not a simple, decoupled Ruby oscillators. So what kind of stuff did they do? So they were interested in many things. One was dynamics in these systems, quantum dynamics. So here, they were looking at a quantum quench, as I said before. And they're looking to quench from this state where they prepared the atom array in a 1-0-1-0-1-0 configuration, which is that every other atom is in the excited state and every shifted by one is in the down state. So they can do it by adiabatically preparing the state by ramping it up. It's not so important how they do it experimentally here, but just suffice to understand that they can produce a state with good fidelity here. For example, in this plot, the bright colors represent the presence of the one. And you can see that at this time slice, the particle number looks like 1010 with good fidelity. And then they let the system go off in time, and they let the system evolve. And what they find is that the system exhibits periodic revivals, multiple periodic revivals. So they can look at the snapshot here, and they find that the state comes back to itself here, here, and here. And one should take note of the timescales involved here. These timescales of revivals are all much longer than the naive timescale that you expect from, say, the inverse of the interaction strength. And so this kind of dynamics is very peculiar because it means that the many-body state is reviving. And this system, I have not showed that to be very ergodic yet, but let's take it. We know that it's interacting. So it's surprising that there are periodic revivals of a many-body state through this Hilbert space, even though the Hamiltonian is strongly interacting. And so this suggests some sort of non-ergodic dynamics. In the next few slides, I'll make this more precise by looking at something more numerical. So I'll take the same model and look at it numerically because it's cleaner there. But essentially, this physics is seen in the experiments. Yes. So because of this, because experiments have a finite lifetime, so of course you see that things will eventually thermalize, or you will lose the control of your, you lose atoms basically. So, if you look at numerics, I'll show you in the next few slides what happens.
And you're showing us only 9 spins, but this part of that 51.
No, so in this particular experiment, they only do it for 9 spins, but they can repeat it for 51, and it shows pretty much the same early time oscillations, the same revivals, right? Yeah, so I'll show that in the next slide. So good question. Is this Hamiltonian solvable? Is it integrable? Is it like simple and that's why we're seeing such oscillations? So let's do a first numerical check, right? Check whether it's integrable or not. And one easy way to check it is to look at the level spacing statistics, which tells us whether, so if a system is integrable, you would expect Poissonian statistics. What we see here is that if we look at how nearby eigenvalues behave, they repel each other. And they repel each other in a way such that the statistics goes towards a Wigner-Dyson class in the GOE class. And so these are for different system sizes. I've taken this figure from this Nature paper, which also analyzed this this model in detail. And I'll talk more about the connection of our work to this paper as well. So what we see here is that as we increase system size, the statistics becomes more and more Wigner-Dyson, which implies that this is not integrable. Maybe the slow convergence is a sign that maybe there's some sort of near integrability thing, but at least at this stage, we don't believe it to be at the integrable point. I'm sorry? So where is the critical point itself? Because I'm looking at this model at this at this particular point only. Yeah, so I'm looking at only dynamics at this particular.
It's exactly a resonance.
Exactly a resonance. So I have no detailing between the states. Right. That's quite away from the critical.
There is a critical point.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Then it should obey Poissonian. Right. I see. No, we didn't see that. No.
So the Eisen universal like only.
I agree. Yeah. This is the middle of a spectrum. Yes. Yeah. So states nearby here. I should also mention that the density of states looks pretty normal, what you expect from a local interacting Hamiltonian, except for a sharp peak, which represents zero modes here. But we don't believe that this affects the dynamics of what we saw before so much. It arises because of some there exists a particle symmetry and also a reflection symmetry. So the system, the spectrum has a particle symmetry and there exists a reflection symmetry which gives you a bunch of zero modes. You can calculate by some index, with an index maybe. But the point here is that this system is not easily solvable, or at least from tonight. So say that again, sir. Why is it GOE? Okay, so this is because the system has a time reversal symmetry. So for Hamiltonians that belong to, yeah. So for example, in this basis, P is really the projector onto the ground state. So it's 1 minus Z. So everything here is real, right? So the Hamiltonian can be written exactly real, which implies that it should obey GOE. If there can exist a basis in which you can write it as a real matrix, then, right. All right, so let's repeat the same experiments that were done experimentally and see it more cleanly. So beginning from this state, the up-down state, which, by the way, has zero energy. So it's a very highly excited state, right? And if it were to thermalize, then you would expect it to thermalize at a effective temperature given by the initial energy, which happens to be zero temperature, right at the middle of the band of the density of states, right? And what we see is that now I'm measuring some local observable, for example, the SZ, and there exists a persistent oscillations that's neither steady nor thermal with a very well-defined period given by 1.51 times the free Rabi frequency, the frequency that you expect of free spins. So this is not due to Rabi oscillations or free spins. This is truly an interacting problem. And to address Andres's question, what happens if you crank it up? So here, of course, I've only shown you finite size systems. But for all the finite size systems that we can simulate, the persistent oscillations are there. And it's not easy to see whether this should die out in the thermodynamic limit. We believe it should, but it's very hard to see it numerically. And for this system sizes, if you crank it up but even further, you will never see any oscillations dying out. So they persist. No, the period is independent of the size of the system. This is one site. So here I'm just using periodic boundary conditions. So I can measure any site I want, and I'll see this oscillation. So I just picked the first site, for example. Yeah, it's very hard to say that it will eventually. So because if it's ergodic, then it should eventually, you know. Right. Yeah, so from the previous slide, you see that this is non-integrable. Yeah, so usually people take non-integrability as a proxy for ergodicity. Right, but then here is one example of an initial state which is not ergodic. But let me show you another example of another initial state. Okay, yes. Can you say that again? Sorry, if you have extensive, but. Right. But the level of statistics would be very sensitive to that. For example, if you took the say a model of U1 symmetry and you forgot to diagonalize in different particle number sectors, you just mesh them together and look at the statistics, you will see them to be Passmanian, right? So it is very sensitive to the presence of symmetries or not. So another example is even like a global symmetry, like a spin flip symmetry. Take the Ising model, add in some fields to break the integrability, right? And preserve the Z2 symmetry. And pretend that you forgot to resolve in the spin, the spin flip up and down symmetries, you realize that you will see Poissonian as well. So it is quite sensitive, that I think. Now, if we consider a different state, for example, an all down state, which happens to be to also have zero energy, so which would correspond to an effective temperature of effective infinite temperature state if it thermalizes, then we can ask what is its dynamics. And by the way, I note that this state is thermodynamically indistinguishable from the previous state. Microscopically, they are different, but in terms of the large thermodynamic quantities, they are just indistinguishable. What we see is that it exhibits, it relaxes quickly, and then it thermalizes to a value that agrees with what you would predict from ETH in this systems, in this constrained systems, right? So by the way, the astute audience would note that this value is not exactly a zero because there's an asymmetry between the number of zeros and ones. And in fact, this kind of behavior is generic for any random state in the 0-1 basis. You can just do it. You can find that eventually you would relax quickly and thermalize. So there exists a very peculiar behavior here. Yes. Okay. Yes.
So exactly what class of initial only the alternating guy?
Yeah, so that's a good question. This alternating guy exhibits the initial state. We have also checked that the 100100 state also exhibits long-lived oscillations, but with a different period.
But then it's only like a order one number.
Yeah.
Then how is it different than just starting out with eigenstates?
No, because the eigenstate would not have a spread of energy. So I didn't show it here, but the initial state has a spread in energy space that goes as square root of the system size. So it's not just peaked at one value in energy. You could, for example, consider a linear combination of two eigenstates and say that, okay, that guy has oscillations, right? Because two eigenstates with different energies. But what I didn't show here was that both states have a wide spread of energy about its mean. So they are like exponentially many. It's decomposed into exponentially many eigenstates. So it's kind of interesting that in one case that they are coherent oscillations, and the other case it is what you expect from each. Right. So yeah, zero modes. No, so it's a good question as to what the nature of those states are, but we don't quite know. But in any case, for dynamics, these states are all at zero energy. So no, but to have oscillations, you need weight and other states as well. They will have some overlap. I'm not saying that there are no overlap, but as far as we understand, the presence of the zero modes are interesting, peculiar in these models, but insofar as dynamics is concerned, they might affect actually the thermal value, but we don't know why that might give rise to long-lived oscillations, for example. Energy being zero here would set what the eventual thermal value should be. You can, yes. Yeah, you can. But I'm saying here that you start from this random product state. This states, you know, if you just put a bunch of zeros and ones and respect the constraints, they all have zero energy. And most of the states would look more like the red one than the special blue initial states. Right. Yeah. They also exhibit oscillations. Yeah, so 100, 100 would exhibit such oscillations. If you have three zeros in between, it's much weaker. Like, yeah, it kind of dies out. Yeah, so we would like to understand how it depends on the ordering in that natural state, but we don't have an understanding. Because even in this case, for example, I said that the period was 1.51 times of that. That's not really a rational number that you can think of, so it's hard to tell, you know, what's going on here. How do you predict, for example, this 1.51 frequency? So what? So it's even more striking if you consider the entanglement growth of these systems. So here I've plotted for you the entanglement for over four sites, four contiguous sites, and one site. So for the four sites, you see that in for the zero state, it exhibits a quick linear growth, and for the blue guy, which is the Z2 state, which by the way is a 1010 state, there is a linear growth here, but with a different slope. Of course, this part here is not quite linear, but I'm just saying that the initial quick increase is linear. Another thing to note is that they saturate to different values. No, this is done in 32 qubits, numerically. So 9 was experiments that in the plot I showed you, but here this is now numerics. Also, experimentally, how do you measure entanglement? I mean, aside from... I see it. Right. Okay, so it's even more striking if you consider the one-site entropy. And so if you see the Z2 state, there are periodic dips in the entropy growth. which tells us that at the single spin level, you know, the many-body state is disentangling itself. It's getting entangled and then disentangling and getting entangled and disentangling. And recall that this motion is throughout the entire, you know, exponentially large Hilbert space. So in some sense, the second law of thermodynamics is being violated here, which is that entropy is not monotonically increasing in time. You have this interacting system that somehow just manages to recover its information from a previous time, and then it disperses again and then recovers again. The late time values, you say? So it will not be 2. Okay, so... yeah, so the value at which it saturates, of course, depends on the subsystem size, right? Oh, because at this stage, like, you know, for the red one... right. The blue one is still... it's still volume law. Yeah, because... yeah, it's a... lot of entanglement that's being created. So when I say that is remaining, yeah, initially it starts at 0. Yes. Yeah. So I'm not saying that the state remains in an error law state for all times, but there's a very peculiar kind of like growth of entanglement there that eventually will eventually saturate for any finite size systems that we consider. And I guess I should check this, but I believe that it will be like volume law in nature. Yes. Sorry? Yeah.
What's the max?
Yeah, that's a good question. So was it 4 or is it 8? Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it should not be 4. So maybe I... I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I agree with the statement that the expected thermal expected reduced density matrix here would not be would have to respect the constraints. So at a level of one spin, for example, you can predict that it should be this, you know, where the phis are given by the golden ratio. So the number of times you see a 0 and number of times you see a 1 are not equal. And so you would expect that to be, you can also predict a similar reduced density matrix for this guy. I guess I'm just saying that maybe I mislabeled 4 here. This was a 6 or something. So yeah, okay, so maybe I mislabeled velocity. I should go back and check this. So what we have here is two different behaviors in the same ergodic same non-integral many body system. We have on one hand states which do thermalize quickly and explore the Hilbert space, you know, quickly, local observables relax, and this is the generic behavior for high energy initial states. They are easy to prepare product states. Whereas here we have examples of special initial states which do not seem to equilibrate or thermalize, at least on the scales that we can access numerically and also experimentally. And so this kind of represents a weak ergodicity breaking in dynamics. So the question we want to ask is, can we capture this periodic revivals in a simple and effective fashion, i.e. by some semi-classical description of the system? You know, yeah. Yeah, so... yeah, so... It's a good point. So going back to this slide, this is the many-body state. The many-body state is indeed undergoing revival. It's coming back to itself. the wave function, the entire wave function is coming back. Yes, of course, not perfectly. Near it, yes. There's an abnormally high fidelity, many body fidelity vector itself that you would not expect from a generic initial state. And of course, then that will show up at a level of observables, right? Because then observables showing oscillations would have this. If the many body state revives, at a level of observables, they will show oscillations. Okay, so our aim here is to try to describe the dynamics of the states simply and effectively. So, and then try to understand what exactly is the trajectory that they're going in, like through the Hilbert space. How is the wave function evolving? So we want to derive some sort of like semi-classical equations motion with the intuition that the state seems to be, you know, entangling slowly. So maybe you can capture it by some low entanglement manifold. Now, if you had a many-body spin system, the usual method of taking the semi-classical limit is to consider products of spin coherent states on each site. And that would just involve like each spin on the block sphere, and then you just mesh them together, and that's your most semi-classical state that you can consider, right? You can write down equations of motion for them. But this constraints, they violate the blockade constraints, the river blockade constraints, that 1-1 is not allowed. So what we can do is simply apply the projector onto this and project out in this state all the ones. And this is akin to some sort of like a Goodes-Wheeler projection. And naturally, it introduces entanglement in this class of states. So here, the point is that for a constrained system like the one we have, it's natural to use lowly entangled states, or it's in fact necessary to consider states that have a bit of entanglement to encode the constraints in them. And so with this class of states, we can actually write them down explicitly as a bond to MPS. Now, this is possible because the projector acts on two sites, and it's just projecting out 1-1 states. And then you can sequentially apply them on every pair. And this projector is actually a bond to MPO, so you can rewrite the entire state as a MPS with this explicit form in the MPS. So the way to understand them is that this builds in correlations irrespective of constraints. If this is 1, the next guy must be a 0, and so on and so forth. But if it's 0, it can be either 1 or 0. And the interpretation of the angles is the angle from the z basis.
So you can have data very, very close.
I can have data very close to the one that is... No, this state already builds in a projection. This state guarantees you that you will never find a 1-1 in the future.
So you can find states that are arbitrary?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, I mean, parameters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Data is very high or five.
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
Very close to one.
No, but you see, if there's large weight here, in the one state, if I multiply that by the next matrix, you are guaranteed to pick up the 0, right? So it builds in the constraints automatically. So this is a good answer, so good variational manifold. For example, if I consider now a two-site unit cell, where the tensors here are different, but on every two sites, but then they're the same every other two sites, it captures the z2 and the 0 state. And in particular, if I set all the angles to be 0, you can see that if I multiply them out, I'll get a 0 state. And if I now, as Andre said, set it to pi, then it has this structure where I will get the 1-0 state. That if I have a 1, I would naturally get a 0 there, so on. So okay, so our aim now is to try to use this manifold of states to perhaps try to describe the many body dynamics. And the way that we want to achieve that is using the time-dependent variational principle. So the idea here is that we have defined a class of states. We want to find the best motion, best quantum dynamics within this manifold. And the way to achieve that is to consider the true evolution, which in general does not preserve you or does not keep you in a manifold, but moves you out of it but we can find the best dynamics that keeps you within the manifold. We can do this by projecting onto the manifold. And so at every point in the dynamics, we can eventually find some equations of motion that move you within this manifold. And mathematically, this comes about from minimizing the instantaneous deviation away from the manifold. So what this term here is the length of the vector out of the manifold. Using this, and by the way, so the TDVP guarantees you motion in the theta phi phase space. This motion is generated by a classical Hamiltonian. And in that sense, you can really think of TDVP as generating classical dynamics within the space. So I would use the word semi-classical here, but just be careful because the states have entanglement, so not really zero entanglement states. Now, solving this, I get this flow diagram of the angles. There are only two relevant parameters, the thetas that describe you, describe the angle from the 0 and 1 configuration. The other two phis, the other two angles, phis, happen to be not varying in time. So this is a pretty cool phase stream plot or flow diagram. Let me just point out that what we see here is that there exists a single periodic orbit in this flow diagram that describes to you how theta E, which is the even site angle, and theta O, which is the odd site angle, evolves with time. So if you start here, which is the D2 1010 state, which is at 0 and pi, then it predicts that your state would move in this manifold towards the opposite state, the 0-1 state. And as if you trace the motion out even more, it goes back to itself and then repeats. So it's an orbit. And the orbit and this equations would predict a period that is similar to what you find numerically as well from ED simulations. Yeah, right. Exactly, yeah. So this state only captures an area loss state by construction. Yeah, right. It captures some features of it. It's able to capture like some basic features of it and some very strong features of it.
So this problem is on the order side of the argument.
Say it again.
It's on the ordered side.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So why can't I think of this thing? The ice theory?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a, you could take a few for the potential starting here.
I see.
So that's all of it.
Yeah. Tunnels across to the other side, I guess, but then
it looks like this order.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure how to think about it that way.
Oh well, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, just general point is that it'd be nice to see how this connects up into the.
That's true.
Where we know these.
But even for free fermions, it's not clear that you expect coherent oscillations for a generic product. The conventional wisdom is that, if you have integrable systems, it will eventually equilibrate to some GGE. Of course, they don't tell you what the timescales are. You have to figure out what the quasi-particles are. This is kind of peculiar in that sense, right? It doesn't even equilibrate in this sense.
Very good. There are also already experiments
eventually die out.
But these are generally different or what is it?
Right, so I guess here we don't really have a physical mechanism for why they die out. I think in that case there's some sort of like strong parameter, a large parameter that sets oscillations. Not really. But in this case, we still don't really have a good physical understanding of what physical mechanisms behind this. Yes. Good. I'll get to that. Yeah. Okay. So we want to classify. So I've given for you the flow diagrams generated by the TDBP. You can also ask what's the error incurred in this motion, right? And that amounts to basically computing the amount of stuff flowing out of the manifold, and that's the error in the TDBP. And you can plot it as a color plot, and we find this pretty cool diagram, which is that large or darker colors represent larger errors, and white regions represent fewer errors or less errors. And the orbit happens to live on some very low error path. And we can quantify how low an error is by integrating the instantaneous error at every point over the period. And we find that it's like, you know, a small number, 0.21. This is just a number for now. So let me come back to it afterwards. Now, to answer Luke's question, if we start with the zero state, which happens to be here at the 0, 0 point, we see that it flows directly to some settle point where it starts to leak out very quickly. So this manifold is not able to capture the growth of entanglement of the state very well. So the crucial point here is not so much that this manifold captures entirely the quantum dynamics, but it captures like the basic features of it. It predicts for you the period, and it tells you, at least at a semi-classical level, what's happening. What's happening is that you have two states that oscillate between one another, and they seem to form some sort of like quantum Newton's cradle, going from 0, 1 to the 1, 0 state, and so on. So what does this really mean? So for example, you can start with this state, and you can plot the many-body fidelity back to itself. And you see that it starts off with 1, because many-body fidelity is 1. And then it revives not to 1, but yeah, it has very large overlap with itself. Yeah, so I think what's happening here is that in terms of the entropy, right? You have many states in the Hilbert space. Of course, the state will leak out to them. The entropy, the definition of entropy might be very sensitive to this, like the tails or the Schmidt values in your decomposition. But there are two large Schmidt values there that oscillate, right? So basically, the entropy is biasing the tails, picking up the first two Schmidt weights. So what does this really mean? And here's a connection to maybe quantum scars. Okay, so what this really means is that we have found this very non-ergodic path in dynamics. It seems reminiscent of quantum scarrings in single particle galactic systems. And for those of you who don't really know what it is, let me give you a brief introduction. So if you have a single particle chaotic system, for example, like a stadium billiard, this is classically chaotic in the sense that paths would diverge exponentially as you let it go. And the manifestation of classical chaos in the quantum world is that wave functions would tend to be ergodic. If you look at stationary states, high energy wave functions, they tend to be uniformly distributed across the phase space. And this is made more precise by Berry's conjecture. And this is how you would recover, you know, this is a manifestation of classical chaos in the quantum world. Now, one could ask the question if this is generic. And by the way, one implication of this is that if you place a particle somewhere in the stadium, a large energy and let it go in time, in the quantum world, that this will be a Gaussian wave packet, for example, it will generically disperse in time because it's being supported by all these ergodic wave functions. And then so it looks like can describe the dynamics by some sort of random matrix kind of description. So eventually it will just very quickly disperse in time. But if you were to put other exceptions, if you were to put the quantum particle on a classical unstable trajectory, then it could potentially live for, you know, some long time if the periodic orbit is weakly unstable. So, for example, if the divergence of the if the Lyapunov exponents around this path is small, then basically the quantum particle can bounce for a long time before eventually dispersing. And the implications of this, the presence of such classical orbits, gives rise in the quantum world to something called scarves. And they were found by Eric Heller and a few people before him in numerics. Basically, instead of all wave functions being essentially ergodic, in order for the motion, or in order for the wave functions to support the motion of this ball on this special orbits, some wave functions must correspondingly be intensified around the classical orbits, right? So this this is captured, for example, in these two pictures here. Numerically, they can find that these are deviations from pure ergodic behavior that you expect from various conjunctions. So perhaps what we have found in our closed orbit description is a many-body generalization of quantum scarring. And this, then the natural question to ask is, you know, what effects does that have on the many-body wave functions? You know, here, because here this is at a level of single particle wave functions. So one could take the initial state, the 1010 state, and of course simply decompose it in terms of the eigenbasis and see what the weight is. You see something really peculiar. This was done by Turner et al. This is also like Dima's work. And what they found is that there exists a pretty special band of states that gives rise to a very high overlap of the initial state that are seemingly equally spaced in frequency. And of course, this would give rise to the oscillations that you see. Now, they also make the connection to quantum scarves here, but and they name these special states. They name these special states with abnormally high overlap with the initial state many-body scarred states. I guess we are making this connection clearer here, firmer here, the analogy to single particle scarves better here. If you plot this same plot, but if you, instead of plotting it in terms of dots, if you smear out each dot and you you make each delta function into a broadened delta function, this would give rise to a local density of states that looks highly peaked like this. Whereas a typical random state, and for example, the zero state would look like a Gaussian, as you expect from a typical state given by, Or in other words, take a random state and decompose it in terms of the eigenbasis, you see that it looks typical. This is the many-body generalization of various conjectures. But here's an exception, the state. So in some sense, can this semi-classical description predict how scarred or how peaked they are? So if you go back to Heller's theory of single particle scars, right, he says that the presence of this weakly unstable classical orbits gives rise to intensification of certain wave functions on top of the orbits. And this can be quantified by saying that there is a factor of like 1 over the Lyapunov exponent times the period about the orbits. So essentially, the logic is as such. If the ball is traveling around an orbit which is not very unstable, so it has to be unstable because it's chaotic, but if it's only weakly unstable, as classified or as quantified by this product, then you can have the particle living for a long time, which means that the wave functions must be very intensified under the region as well. And so there is some scaling that you can predict from here. In this case, we have a scenario where we can quantify also how good our approximations are. And we can do that by looking at the integral of the TdVp error around the orbit, which is small. And so we would want to use this factor to say something about the enhancement of certain many-body eigenstates about the expected value from say random matrix predictions or ETH predictions. But this is still a work in progress, and we have to understand this in relation to the thermodynamic limit, which is a concept absent in the single particle case. So, Yeah, right. So gamma here represents the error at every point in the flow diagram, right? So it tells you at every point how badly the TDBP is doing. Okay, so what we can do is we can compute an average over the orbit. If we trace out this path, we can integrate out the instantaneous error, or integrate the instantaneous error to get some sort of like mean error. Well, in this case, I'm not dividing by the period, so it's not the mean, it's the accumulated error.
Question about the corner. Those die at the corner where it's dark, the larger error, or minus 5, 5, minus 5, 5.
Yeah, so this appearlessly.
So are the orbits like going corner to corner, or they're not more orbits?
So the corners, like which ones? Here, okay. Yeah, so this is another one because this circle here is the same as this circle, actually. Yeah, there's a bit of like redundancy in the coordinate description. So I've just zoomed in on the main circle, but
right.
Other circles also.
And can diagram of the other
top? Yeah, it's a good question. So not in this particular diagram because this is a two-site unit cell. Right, so we would have to repeat the same analysis for a three-site unit. Okay. So, and let me just flash to you some higher spin generalizations. So you could ask the question, is this very generic or is it just peculiar to this model? And higher spin models are easy to think about. So instead of a spin half degree of freedom, you have a spin s degree of freedom with 2s plus 1 states. And the way that we impose the constraints are that if site I happens to be populated in the excited states, not the ground state, then it blockades the neighboring site in such that it has to be in the ground state. And that defines the Hilbert space. And the model is basically rotations in this constrained Hilbert space. And we can repeat the same analysis, define the same class of variational states that can potentially capture this manifold. And we can consider the same two initial states, the zero state and the Z2 state, which happens to be the zero and the highest weight state, zero and highest weight state. And we find for spin one and spin two, slightly different diagrams because I've zoomed in on a certain region, but essentially, the Z2 state starts here, it starts to move, and then because of the coordinate redundancy or the 2 pi periodicity of it, it jumps here, and then it comes back here, and so on and so forth, and starts to oscillate. And in ED, in numerics, you can see that there are very persistent and large oscillations as well for the Z2 state, as opposed to the more generic behavior for the zero state. Yes.
Yeah,
the diagonal line is in the orbit. I agree with that. But you see that it passes through a region of like pi leakage out of it. Yeah. So in that sense, you might say that the zero state also is orbiting, but it leaks out quickly, right? So there needs to be some quantification of how good this orbit is. Right. Good point. So what we found is like a new physical phenomenon in the family of models, which exhibits like weak ergodicity breaking for some very special initial states and usual thermalizing behavior for others. Okay, so that's pretty much it. Let me just conclude by saying that what we have done here is that we have managed to describe the system semi-classically via some simple ansatz that captures the constraints and can be represented by a Bontu MPS. It's natural because you need to use it to figure out the constraints. We found isolated unstable orbits that capture the persistent oscillations that we see in numerics, and they represent non-ergodic paths in the Hilbert space because your state is spreading out in Hilbert space and coming back itself. However, we have not really elucidated the physical reasons for why we get this closed orbit. So that's still an open question, it's still work in progress. It's unclear what the role of the constraints are in giving rise to these orbits are. And I should also mention that there are features, if you study the spectrum of this model, there are features which seem to suggest that maybe this model is, you know, somewhat close to integrability, but obviously is not directly at an integrable point. So maybe that's a reason for the closed orbits and persistent oscillations, but we would have to understand better what kind of integrability that is, if so, that's true. And we made some connections to SCARS, and we had to understand better how to make this generalization more rigorous. And perhaps the most interesting thing is that the fact that people in high energy are also excited in this, that there's some sort of like information retrieval. You throw a particle into a black hole, it comes back to itself and revive state. And that's interesting. So with that, let me just thank my collaborators and people who have been with me. And thank you for your attention. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Interesting. That's interesting. I don't know because I've not looked at the Game of Life, but that would be very interesting to see if it's connected. This is quantum, yes.
Yeah, it is.
Do you have a way to show the you can have exponents?
Right. So indeed.
Because I don't know if you know this, there's a nice work by Young and Apple where they show that the linear growth of the entanglement energy is characterized by.
Okay.
So if you can measure your Lyapunov exponent in an independent way,
yeah, I see.
That against the linear growth.
I see it. So what we have here are equations of motion, and they describe the equation, the motion within this manifold, and you could indeed compute the Lyapunov exponents by taking two nearby points and seeing how fast it diverges. And yeah, indeed.
So that would be a really
interesting check. Yeah, I agree. So the Hilbert space maps to the fusion space of anions, of energy anions, but the Hamiltonian is not the golden chain or something that you think about. So at the level of Hilbert spaces, it's isomorphic.
For the anion chain,
For the they are matrix product state representations of the ground state, or
any
of them. For which states?
For targeting.
Okay, but we're not working in the ground state. So.
Yeah, but you're working in low entanglement.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if
so you would want to look at the dynamics of states near the ground states? Or?
No, I mean, basically doing what you're doing. You're assuming like the ergodic part, dynamics, coupled.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this entire framework, the manifold of states can be applied to this another point. I mean, another model that has the same Hilbert space. Right? There's no reason why this doesn't apply there. It, what only changes is the analysis and what equations you get there. I'm saying that the class of states that we consider is very general. This class respects the constraints.
Yeah.
So
that's what it is. I'm just asking, does working directly any operation?
Oh, I see. Good question. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, clarifying. Also,
mm-hmm.
You say that this is an exception to ETH. But ETH sort of says that for generic states, it doesn't say this is a very special state.
Right.
So I would say it's not an exception at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it depends on your definition of as you say, what you would expect. There's a strong version, and there's a weak version of it. But also, ETH is saying the infinite time value, right? Whether it approaches what's given by a Gibbs ensemble or not. Here we're focusing mainly, so this analysis tells you nothing about the infinite time behavior, right? It just tells you that there exists a path which happens to be non-ergodic in dynamics, at least for some time, right? So it doesn't tell you eventually what it reaches. We actually believe that if you crank up the system size large enough, that the value at which it the oscillations oscillate about should eventually approach the thermal value, and that the oscillation amplitudes would also die out. But the fact that the oscillations, large oscillations, are there for finite time as opposed to other initial states is a fact that is present. And that's a surprise.
The other clarifying question, you kept saying that this is sort of an exceptional kind of dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I would have said it was an exceptional state. Why are you ascribing it to the dynamics? The dynamics are always the same. And other states behave normally exactly as you expect.
Right.
And so the dynamics is there about it, but there's an exceptional state.
Right. So I agree with that. So I would, yeah, maybe that's a matter of semantics.
For me, it matters because in the billiards case, for example, the Sinai billiard is provably ergodic in the strongest sense that we know how to do that for any system.
Right.
And yet it has exceptional states. Like,
right.
As a starting state.
I agree, yeah. So is it, yeah, perhaps one should say that there are initial states which are special, right? And
thank you for
yep, thanks.